perspective.
Sounds good.
That way their input might help with the decision on that motion, so that'd be the only other thing I'd suggest. Most meetings that doesn't occur, but I'm sure it will coming up.
All right, sir. I don't believe we received minutes from the last meeting yet.
They're on the finance table.
Were they emailed? Does anyone know?
I didn't get any.
We don't have them copies now.
We'll approve them at the next meeting if that's okay with you.
Actually, there are copies coming your way, so it might cover everybody.
How many pages have we got?
So your approval, Mr. Chairman, is you sent it out to us a couple of years ago when we kept on holding minutes,
mm-hmm.
but then the legal determination was that as long as you ask for approval, even if there are members who weren't here or anything else, when you do that, that makes the minutes final. And of course, you always ask if anyone has any changes or anything like that. So we can wait till next meeting since you didn't receive them.
I would prefer that. If everybody would review these at their convenience before the next meeting, we'll approve them at that point. So that puts staff in charge. Are you ready?
I'm ready, and I'm part of staff, and you're going to hear from some other people too. So I just want to, one thing you said, which maybe some people forget about FMAC, Finish Master Advisory Committee. You are an advisory committee to the commission. So you're one wing of information that comes to the commission, usually through staff presenting that to the commission, you know, giving a summary, which will happen tomorrow, will be a summary of these first three meetings. And staff is working also to advise the commission. So keep in mind as we go forward that although I think there's a pretty good symbiosis between FMAC and staff, sometimes there's not. And so just realize that, you know, staff is the group that is working on fisheries management all the time. I mean, that's our job. And so keep that in mind if you run across anything and you say, I wonder why staff did that instead of what we thought was a good idea. So it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. And I'd like to say that tonight is more striped bass after Pat goes through the black sea bass options. I think we had three responses, Alexa, on black sea bass, and it wasn't by any means all in the same camp. I think we had a June 1 to June 21 option, and maybe two wave 5 options?
Yes.
Okay, so we haven't settled that as far as your advice from the committee as to how to go forward with the black sea bass. We've let the commission know on your advice. Pat will go over that, and then tonight Pat will do the commercial sector information on the commercial sector, and then I'll follow up with a rehash of the recreational sector. We do want to sunset the meeting at 8 o'clock. We've got a commission meeting tomorrow. There's a good thing about having this right before the commission meeting, and then I guess the downturn is staff has to come back and get ready in the morning. And if you've been seeing the commission information, we no longer hold anything at 12 noon for fisheries. It can come up anytime. So that's been a big change for us as well. And with all this, we are not in a situation yet where we know what the ASMSU is going to do exactly. Staff hasn't learned anything different except there's a 17% reduction out there on the 2017 data. Other than that, we haven't received any other information. It's interesting because we're looking at the 22nd of April, which is 8 days away from the meeting of the ASMSC. The ASMSC always insists that everyone get their information in 2 weeks in advance. But the ASMSC does a lot of supplemental materials, and I suppose that's when we'll have some information. we don't know the direction. Even to think that what I just told you, the 17% reduction of 2017 data, even that's not solid, because once the management board meets on April 30th, no one knows. No one knows what's going to come out of that. You did get the letter from Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Virginia urging some very prompt action. And also you received the letter from Commissioner Bowman on our trophy size, our spring fisheries. So those were sent to you yesterday. And so they've also been distributed through the ASMSC and will be part of the supplemental materials there. Our charge as a staff right now has been, in our third meeting, it'll be the same. We're looking to see how we can assist with conservationally equivalent measures. So for example, if there's going to be blunt changes, we want to make sure that we have the opportunity, you and us together, have the opportunity to say, well, if we try something different, can we do the same thing as whatever ASMSC says we have to do? And conservation equivalency and adaptive management is the hallmark of ASMSC. The small dilemma we have a commercial fishery, which is an ITQ fishery. So it's different than states that don't have an ITQ fishery. For example, in a commercial fishery, if you change the size limit and make a different size limit, raise the size limit, the size limit, you could say those are savings. But because we have an ITQ and we have a quota, it's a little bit different. We don't have that flexibility. So to look at conservation equivalency to the commercial fishery, we have to have options that will lower the fishing mortality rate and raise the spawning potential. And no one on staff is really adept at that, but we, as I told you before, we will reach out to individuals who are, depending on the options that are chosen, and we'll get some assistance on that. So that's where we stand. On the recreational fishery, when I go through that, I'll have a handout of the options just to refresh your mind on what the options are. And I think you've seen probably most of them. But let's wait till we get there. So, Mr. Chairman, Pat's up next with Black Sea Bass.
All right, I have one more business question.
Sure.
Have we heard from the people that aren't here?
No, we haven't.
Thank you.
No, we have not. So, thank you for the seven of you who have attended.
Was actually able to record 62% more like Steve has said, we sampled the bylaws for sampling this year, and the bottom line was that the number in red is the 10,082 are the number of pounds that we have to, in a sense, pay back or account for during the open season for having this petition. We also, as I mentioned, law enforcement, they had 519 hours given to recreational fishing during that month. They did a number of dockside patrols. They did vessel patrols. They even did an air patrol, I guess, in one of their planes. They only had one violation, and that was for fishing. Somebody was fishing without a permit. One violation of that. And it's a breakdown of where that effort was occurring by the law enforcement areas. You've seen this before. Alice provided this report. It shows that 10,082 pounds and how we can account for it. Wave 3 is May and June. Wave 4 is July and August. Wave 5 is September and October. Wave 6 is November and December. And what this is it takes the number, the total weight, the average weight of harvest during 2017 and 2018 divided by the number of days, the calendar days during that wave, and comes up with what the daily landing rate is, and divides that number by the 10,082 pounds to come up with the number of days that we would have to adjust during that wave. So during wave 3, it's 21, and it goes all the way up to 61 days in wave 6. Wave 6 is not a lot of black sea bass landed, so we can't even account for it. We have to use part of wave 5 to account for that payback. We have to provide. The FMAC, we had several discussions with you gentlemen about this. We had in our January 9th meeting, folks were talking about the wave 3 reduction, and they wanted us to look at other options. Alex came before you last month, provided those options. Most of you said you wanted the shortest period possible, which was 21 days, which looked at wave 3 or wave 5. And you know, the season begins somewhere between May 15th and June 5th. However, some of the head boat and charter captains were saying they rely heavily on black sea bass in May, so they'd like to see that possibly pushed back. What we're looking for from you tonight is a definitive recommendation for dates that you'd like to see for this year. Where should we take those 21 days? And that's really all I have at this point. I mean, I'll open it up. I have a chart that I could show some of the recommendations we have that would help with your decision making.
Please. Yes, sir.
The question I have is, it increased about 60% this year over last year. Is there a mechanism in the future if it keeps increasing like that? Because you'll be taking away from everybody.
Now, the 60% is what we collect the biological samples.
No, I'm just saying, you know, the first year it was 6,000 sometimes, and this year it's 10,000 something. So that's around a 60% increase. If it did that again,
we'd have to pay back more hits.
So it may come a time that you'll have to do something about that, because you'll be taken away from a real large area to suit a smaller area.
If this fishery continues to grow, we've only done it for 2 years, it was 6,000 last year, 10,000 this year, but...
I think the first year the weather was terrible. Last year probably was a lot better, and it may not amount to anything. But I just think that's something that needs to be thought about in the future, that if it keeps growing, you'll be taking it away from a lot of the small boats that are able to go, you know, June. And it's a lot better for a 25-foot boat to go in June than it would be in February.
Any other questions or comments?
Is there a higher mortality rate for sea bass as the water gets warmer in the summer?
Please.
I would assume for almost all species it would be yes. I think that, you know,
it's 15% discard mortality.
That's good, yeah.
So the warmer the water, the more undersized fish that are released may not make it.
When you get in that deep of water, the bottom temperature doesn't change according to the sun. It's usually by currents and different things. The thermocline won't go down to 100 foot of water. So basically, a lot of times on the bottom, I've seen it. The divers talk about it with you know, 70 degrees on top, and they almost freeze to death when they get on the bottom, because it, so a lot of times the water temperature on the bottom is completely different than on top.
Okay, would bass that provide options or preferences? I personally don't fish for black sea bass. I'd like to start, but I'm going to leave this up to the people that do. We don't have any party boat captains here tonight. Tom, please.
Have you heard from the charter industry at all on this?
Initially we were looking at taking this in the beginning of the season instead of having to split it up. It was at the last meeting that the charter, the head boat was saying we would already go, you know, trips. We'd rather have it later in the year.
Skip Feller sent in one of the three options. Right. He wanted June 1 to 21. He said he had canvassed a number of charter operators, and so that's the only link from the head boat charter.
The clarification, when you say he wanted June 1 to 21, that's the days he wanted to give up.
Yes.
Okay. If my memory is correct, that was kind of our recommendation last time, to take it off of the front end.
Except for the front end, I think, is...
The front end is May 15th. The open season begins May 15th.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Any other comment? Yes, Tom.
So effectively, to carry on with your thoughts, is that would make it a split season, which I'm not ideal. No, it's not.
Okay.
It's easy to get recruitment when you've got a split season.
Any comments from the audience? Anybody like to speak? Please come up, give us your name and who you represent, if anybody.
So I'm Mike Avery with the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. I actually did not personally participate in the February fishery, so we went out and asked our anglers through a survey on our website, and they can vote through a poll of what their preferences are. Now, we have limitations of a poll. It's limited to one per IP address. So technically, you could vote at home and vote twice at work with a different IP address. But I don't think most anglers do that. Think they vote and make their position known. So I guess Pat did summarize the results of our poll that we did. We didn't get a huge number of responses, but kind of the slight leader became June 1st and 21st. I suspect why that went out is because that's when pretty much every other fish is wide open for us. Pretty much everything that you can possibly catch in Virginia is now available to be caught, whether it's offshore species, whether it's cobia, flounder, bay fish, you know, everything is kind of wide open. So I think as you get into 1 June, there's so much things to fish for. As you get into the hot days of summer, then there's less fish for. So our recommendation is to go with June 1st and 21st. Because that's going to run out on our poll, and our organization likes to go with what our anglers are telling us, and so that's our recommendation is that we close down June 1st to 21st. I will repeat what I said from the beginning is, I feel strongly that we should not be paying anything back for fishing in February. Our catch in Virginia is minuscule compared to our northern neighbors. So you're talking about making us pay back peanuts from our overall catch, meanwhile our northern neighbors are just whacking away at the sea bass, even when they don't fish February. So our February fishery paying back is still peanuts compared to our northern neighbors. So my personal viewpoint is we shouldn't have to pay back, but that's what Atlantic States is telling us to do. So we're going to color inside the lines and do what we're told to do and pay back. So that's our recommendation.
Any questions for Mr. Avery? Well, we really appreciate you sending that poll out and helping us gather information like this. It's very important.
And that's a good way for us is to reach out to anglers. They get to vote and get their opinions, especially when it's something like this where there's so many different options.
The more we hear, the better. So we appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
John?
No other comments. I'd like to put forth a motion that this committee adopt and recommend that June 1st to 21st be passed forth to the commission for action.
Do we have a second?
I second that.
We have a second. Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Discussion from the audience. I'm sorry, did you have
something? I asked people to run home, and I relayed this to Rob and others. That, that was our choice to would be June. We didn't want anything that had July and August in it because that's when the charter boats home catch black sea bass. So the recommendation was option one, too.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. I'm not going to vote. 2, 3, 4, 5. It raises up. Okay. All right. All opposed? None? All right. We have it. Yep.
The rest of the meeting tonight we'll be talking about striped bass, and as Rob said, I'm going to lead off with just giving some information about commercial striped bass options that we talked about and how they relate back to the stock assessment. And Rob mentioned this, it's we're above the fishing threshold, so it's top, they're overfishing, and below the spawning stock is below the threshold, so overfishing is occurring. ASMSC is probably going to recommend a 17% reduction. That's coming out of the striped bass technical committee right now, as Rob said, next week. Up in Arlington, and the decision will be made on where that goes from there. So our goal is to lower fish, as Rob said, lower our fishing mortality, increase spawning stock biomass. How are we going to do that? Reduce harvest, reduce fishing season, increase size limits, or have some sort of gear restrictions. I just wanted to show this real quickly to point out, larger fish, everyone knows, bigger fish have more eggs. This is data from a graduate student dips very recently. It only goes up to about 40-inch fish, which shows that large fish can have more eggs, so it makes sense that we should be doing something to try to protect those larger fish.
Can I just understand? Can we get back to the other chart?
Yeah. Robert Rules, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Could you please go back to the previous chart? So that with the eggs that are below the line, does that mean they are less likely to spawn?
It's just more variability. I mean, it's like each, you know, these are individual fish, so there's going to be variability within the population of when those animals are spawning and what the fecundity is. I mean, it could be any number of things. It could be error in the measurement. It could be the animal already spawned out. It could be any number of things.
But he said, does a 19.7-inch female go up and lay eggs?
Sure. It's pretty low at that point. You look at the fecundity, it's near zero. Okay.
Thank you.
We have Tom Powers.
So let me restate the question, I think. Just align the linear fit to the data.
I was just trying to show that fish have more eggs. That's all I was trying to show. Okay.
But it looks like a linear fit to the data.
Can I?
Probably is, yeah.
I have one question, if I may. I know in the summer flounder debate, there was a lot of talk about the bigger fish having more eggs. But then there was some comment about the oldest fish, the eggs not being as viable as the younger fish. Is that true, and is that true with
rockfish? That's probably true with a lot of species. You know, so they get, you know, geriatric, so to speak, they're probably not as fecund, but, you know, they reach a certain point. But, yeah, the oldest animal is probably not as fecund.
Okay. But being geriatric, I understand that.
That was kind of what I was going to ask, but we're saying the average is the mean line is the average. So we're saying the number of eggs below that line is below the average, and the ones above is above it. So that has nothing to do with the viability of the eggs, it's just the number of the eggs.
It's just, all that is this, those are individual fish. Basically, all they're doing is drawing a trend line to them.
Because, I mean, you know, if you would go by number of eggs, it looks like 27 fish are the best. 27, 46, I mean, all of them are above average for that line. I was just, that's all I needed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fitted line, so it's not perfect. I mean, you can see there's a lot of noise with this data. I mean, like I said, you know, I was just using an example of bigger fish, more eggs.
Older women get pregnant, but they have a lot of trouble delivering children.
Mike?
So is it a good conclusion to say that a 35 or 36 inch fish and up are the most important ones to protect?
I think larger fish
are
more important to protect, yes.
Thanks. Anybody else? All right,
thank you
very much.
Moving on to some of our, this is from our biological sampling program, and it shows the percent of the catches we monitor that are above 36 inches, which is the blue line, and above 40 inches for the coastal striped bass. And you can see that line is generally increasing, the percentage is increasing. For 2017, the percent of fish larger than 36 inches was 79%, and those larger than 40 inches was 34%. So a large portion of the coastal striped bass that are being harvested are in that size group that you just mentioned as well. And overall for the bay, this includes the main stem bay as well as the tributaries. I put 28 inch in there as well, along with fish of 36. And you can kind of see on here that the percentages aren't as high, but we have 14% of the catch is greater than 28 inches, and a small amount of 7% greater than 36, and only 3% greater than 40.
Yes, Mike.
Was this from the statistics that Jill staff keeps or from the sampling?
This is from the sampling that we go when we sample from the processors. The catch comes in, and our staff go out and they work up the catch at the plants and things like that.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand the sampling, I know that you guys go to Pearson's in Colonial Beach and you buy fish from them, and is that your sampling?
We go to a number of places. Yeah. Random stratified design.
Okay.
We go to a number of different places. It's set up so we try to hit as many of them. Awesome.
Tom?
So could you go back one slide just for... So what this is saying is, and again, this is a commercial fishery, not the recreational fishery. I thought in our last meeting we had discussed that the commercial fishery was moving more towards the smaller fish, smallish fish. Whereas
this isn't the coastal, this is...
Well, but in the coastal, I mean, greater than 40 inches is... still 30% of their catch. That's a pretty darn big fish. And greater than 36, you know, that's... So my concern is that the spawning stock, which I think is what we're trying to protect, most Buchan fish, that it's pushing up and up with that particular fishery. Whereas with the next slide, it's going kind of the opposite way here. Your really large, or your medium to large fish, the greater than 36, is going down, which may be a question of they just aren't there. But it also could be market driven, which we've talked about before.
Right.
So I think of the commercial fishery, the one thing to consider would be the average weight rather than what you're just sampling.
We have that information, and it varies by system.
Time wise, the coastal fish, I know they move up. After they spawn, they come back out and move up the coast. So are these specifications you're giving us mostly after, or is it year round? Is it when they're on the way to the bay or on the way back?
Springtime.
Okay. A lot of the fish are mine. They measure every one they have for years. The boy that worked with them, they measure every one of his too, and they have for years. And I used to take that, caught a lot for spot years ago, they measured all of them. The fish I'm catching right now are full row. They're Hudson River and Delaware Bay fish. They're not going into Chesapeake Bay now. They are going north. I might catch them in, you know, 6, 7, 8 fish, not a lot. But so they're going to be full of rut. The vast majority of the fish that they catch, like Watts Creek, they catch a lot there. They're the ones that left the bay after they spawned. So they're not going to shed rut. But, you know, you got so many fish, you're not getting a sample, because the majority of the Virginia coastal quota now belongs to out of state. It's been sold out of state, so those fish are not getting, it's probably going to be at least 50,000 pounds landed there in a shank tank this spring that you're not going to sample eight fish. You haven't sampled them for years, and every year it's been more and more gone, you know, right out of state. So, am I like everybody else? No. I wish I was, because I'm half crazy, and I'm hoping everybody else isn't. But, you know, I guess when you were sampling with the grow in them, that was bayside fishing also. It was everything. That wasn't seaside fish in general. That was just when you were showing the amount of eggs for the 36-inch fish and stuff, the other chart that you have.
That wasn't even our data. That was just something.
That was everywhere. That was just Virginia.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I would say, you know, I could really hurt the numbers by being my fish so prevalent into it all the time. Because if everybody wasn't doing the exact same thing I was, it would be different. And what gets me is we're showing that we're seeing way more bigger fish, but the average weight's not changing. Because when you had it up there last time, the average weight was, I don't understand that. Because, you know, it's been gradually, we know one time we had a problem. We know where the problem was. Because we had some individuals that were reporting their fish, the weight wasn't even legal. They were averaging like 5 or 6 pounds and had to weigh at least 8 pounds to even be a legal fish, but that was that 1 year, and it drops to 15 pounds, but in generally, it's been going up very slowly, about a pound a year. So, I mean, I don't see how we're getting so many more big fish, and the weight not going up no more. Did my fish weigh up? Mine, you know, this gentleman was talking about 25-pound fish. A lot of my fish are 25-pound fish and bigger, and they always have been in the spring. But, you know, when you go back years ago, things have changed. A lot of the spring bass years used to be caught in the fall in the ocean. We didn't have a big spring run. Right. Now it's the other way around. You'll start it up in the fall. You can't catch any fish, but they come down late and are outside of 3 miles. You know, I just don't see why it doesn't correspond with the fact that they're getting much longer, but they don't weigh anymore.
I don't think you've seen the weight. So this is the situation. We have a tag-based system, and we have what is turned in for tags and weights. That's a different program that's going into our database. The sampling program, we haven't shown the weights yet. We can do that next time around. But the sampling program, my thought is it's a snapshot. There's a lot of fish, though. I mean, Bruce is sampling a couple thousand fish a year, which is good. Missing a lot of fish, yes. I would think if you had any sort of skepticism or thought about the bias of the sampling program, it would be just that we're probably missing fish that are of all different sizes. But with the way things have been going, probably large fish too, even ordinary in the state, that don't even come into Virginia. So we know that, but compared to what's turned in the tag-based approach, which Jill Ramsey manages, you know, there's a big difference with the sampling program. And the way the sampling program was used before 2007, it was used by, when we had more gears out there, when we had PoundNet was about 20%. Gillnet was still the largest gear, but we had false seine and hook and line and even BiteNet. And we used to do seasonally, spring and fall for all those gears, and then come up with a weighted average weight. And that's how the tags were figured out. Now it's primarily Gillnet. A little bit of hook and line, a little bit of pound net, and you know, we'll go over that next time as well. But I think the disconnect that you're mentioning is that you're thinking of weights that are coming from what we call FSMRPT, that's our database weights. And it's what we get from the fishermen. So the sampling program is outside of that, it's independent of that, and pretty much there's going to be a difference in weight too.
Okay, Rob, then I do have a question on that then, because I'm getting more confused. When Myra comes measure my fish, that's the sampling program.
Yep, that's it.
And then when you're taking this other stuff, you're just translating the weight by numbers and coming up with a length. So if somebody says they caught 1,000 pounds and they had 100 fish, they're 10 pound average. So do you try to make them today 31 inches, which is a 10 pound fish, or because you know, because there'll be so many variables in that. So I think the sampling program will give you those variables. You know, some of the fish I catch are 12 or 13 pounds. Some of them are 35 or 40 pounds once in a while. But they're going to average, mine's going to average 22 pounds. That's what they've been averaging for years, 22 pounds.
Well, we'll see that. But again, I think the only thing I wanted to mention was the weight that you're talking about not changing is related to the tag-based system.
And
it's not related to what Pat's showing you right now, the biological sampling. We haven't worked that up, but we will. And Adam is going to also look at, you know, what representation is there of the sampling program to the harvest. So when this program was designed in 1988, for larger size fish, the objective was to have 1% of the entire commercial fishery. 1%. And, you know, with other fish species, you can't get close to that. For the larger species, you should get close to 1%.
So 1% is what we're supposed to harvest is 1%?
1% of what you do harvest. So in a year, if you harvest 1.1 something million pounds, we should be able to sample 1% of that.
Okay, I got you.
Yep. And that's fairly representative. So, I mean, I think next to North Carolina, you know, Virginia and North Carolina have probably the most representative sampling routines.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
And so how do we reduce the harvest of these large fish? Just the season, these are just some standard things we were talking about earlier with another species. If we restrict that mesh size and adjust the maximum size limit, these are the options that we have from, you know, that were presented at the last FMAC meeting. Shortening the season, which was, you know, we kind of have to be lukewarm about that. Reduce the mesh size in the bay to 7 inches and the oceans to 9 inches. It didn't seem to be too responsive on that one. Maximum mesh size during March 26th to June 15th and maximum size of 28 inches. I had a yes on that one. People were interested in looking at that. And the maximum size of 36 inches in the Virginia portion of the Potomac River, you said, you know, might be worth looking at it further. So those, you know, those are the options that we presented last month. If there are any others that you're interested in looking at, or less than explore if you can. We're just trying to provide some of the information that we have. Looking at commercial striped bass gill net regulations by state, the states that are great outer states that don't have a commercial fishery, but in general, most of them have a 6 to 8 inch stretch mesh. Maryland is 5 to 7, Tunnelburg is 5 to 7, North Carolina is in the ocean less than 7 inches, and in the Albemarle 5.25 to 6. But just showing overall what the mesh sizes are, what they're using, and associated with their size fish. And that goes back to what we talked about last month of, you know, what size mesh we, if we want to have a 36 inch fish, as you mentioned, Mr. Lightfoot, what size mesh would we want to have associated with that? So, I mean, you have a real stern look on your face.
I'm just looking the regulations over because, you know, some things are deceiving. Just like New Jersey, they've taken their commercial quota and gave it to recreational fishermen for special season. Connecticut has done the same thing. Maine and maybe New Hampshire have outlawed the sale of striped bass.
All the ones that are gray are ones that don't have a commercial fishery.
Yeah. Red. Pink.
Pink. Well, it's pink. I'm sorry. It's gray on my head, so sorry. Let's pink up there.
I don't see any colors.
Or no commercial field edge.
So no commercial field edge. In the case of like New Jersey, they prohibit any kind of take striped bass and any other method of angling. Some states have a legitimate definition of it.
So I see, note that Virginia is the only one that allows greater than 7-inch mesh, is that correct?
It appears that way, yes.
But there's one right there, says 8 inches in New York.
New York has a 6 to 8. We don't have a maximum size mesh.
Could we? I'd like to talk about the options, but I don't know.
Are you ready for
go back to school?
Okay, may I?
Please.
On the option four, I'm a member of both watermen's associations in Virginia. Well, three, the Potomac River, Twin Rivers, and Virginia Watermen's. All the people that I know, and I fish the Potomac tributaries, so does Wayne France, and so do the majority of the people I know. We have rarely ever caught a fish bigger than 36 inches. There's very few in the Potomac tributaries. So you could restrict that. That would be a zero impact. I don't think there would be any savings from that. And I know the statistics would be easy to get, but for how many, you know, large fish over 36 inches are caught in the Virginia tributaries. So I don't think option four would have any savings. On option three, we already, March 26th, can't keep anything over 28. And a 7-inch net is too big to have, because that's, I mean, none of us have in the Potomac tributaries would have a net bigger than even a 7-inch, because that's going to catch us a 31, 32-inch fish, 29-inch fish. To keep it at 28, I have a 6-inch mesh, and that is right at 28 inches. So option three, I don't think, would have any savings. The last meeting, you guys talked about shortening the season would just jam up more nets and have a glut on the market, and the price would go down. And then that leaves option two. And the Potomac is more successful in catching their portion of the quota, and so is Maryland, with a 7-inch maximum mesh size. They catch a higher percentage of the quota than Virginia does. And the watermen got used to it. And there is a comment from Mr. Bowden that there's not many 7-inch mesh nets on the market. Well, there's 736 gill net licenses in the Potomac, and the majority of all those are 7 inches. So there's an awful, I think probably the most common in the bay size net is 7, 6.5. So if you eliminate option four, is no savings. You eliminate option three, is no savings. Shortening, taking option one, doesn't have any good benefits. We're only left with one. But statistically, and I'm no fishery manager, but I'm a statistics guy, and I did a lot of research. Our two sister organizations that share the bay, that have more quota combined than we do, are successful with a 7-inch mesh. That's going to irritate a number of fishermen. I could only find in the statistics there's 16 watermen that average greater than 20 pound of fish in their entire quota, and they're primarily in Reedville.
Oh, they're what?
Reedville. For the majority of the big fish that are caught, are caught from Gwen Island up.
All right, Ernie.
I'm not going to address the Potomac River issue because I really don't know anything about it. And if this gentleman says, you know, we had people here last time who was complaining about the 36 inches and complaining about the 7 inches, and that, you know, it could have been one individual or it could be quite a few people. I have no idea, so I wouldn't comment on that. I think we all kind of agreed on option three because there was no need to have a bigger net out. If you can't sell the fish, why would you want to kill them? You know, I quit a lot of fisheries because I just like black grown fishery. When they took sharks away from me, I quit because I didn't want to kill sharks while I'm grown fishing. I quit. I still had a big trout. I quit doing that when they took shad away because I've been killing a lot of shad for it. So that makes sense. On shorten the season, I think that's a bad idea because you never know when your season's going to be. It's not like, you know, when you plant corn 40 some days later it's going to come up or something. And fishing is so variable, you don't know. And, you know, Merlin uses nylon nets. I don't know what you have on the Potomac River. Can you use monofilaments on the Potomac River?
I don't know one person that uses the multifilament nets.
Well, I mean, you have to in Merlin. It might be different on Potomac River, but in Spain and Merlin, the only place you can have monofilament nets is Wolchester County on the seaside. Everything else has to be multi-ply, which they call a monoply, which is similar to, it's a cross between the two of them. It's actually monofilament, real small fibers that's twisted like
when I have
soft nylon.
When I have gill nets made at Ocean Products and by Buddy's gill nets over in Chrisfield, they never even ask me if I want multifilament. It's this assumption that it is.
You know, if you're from Virginia, they wouldn't ask you. I'm sure it would sell you a lot of filament because it's from Maryland. Like I say, you can use it in Wolchester County, you can't the rest of the place. And I had no problem with the 9 inches in the ocean. I made that motion when I was commissioned many years ago, and I have no problem with it. I think there's going to be individuals on the bay, and I can't believe that the 20 people you alluded to, I mean the 16 people that's catching 20 pound fish, that none of them was on the eastern shore, because I would have thought there was more than that on the eastern shore alone.
Only 16 from Jill's statistics. She ran how many watermen average greater than 20 pounds, and it was 16.
I'm just going to say, could I say something?
Yes, tomorrow. I'll come up with you. I have something to say to you. But you're first.
It's just the average for the 16 individuals is a little bit misleading because it is an average. Those individuals in their harvest reports, could half of those fish can be greater and half of those fish can be smaller. So it's not saying that those individuals only catch the larger fish. So it's just a little bit misleading. I just wanted to
show that. I mean, 8 inches is the most common net on the eastern shore. On the Chesapeake Bay.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's where we are. I had no problem with option two. Option three is just common sense. That should have been something that should have been all along. Option four, I really, you know, I don't have a dog in that fight. And I know Doug Jenkins and some other gentlemen they're not here tonight. They were upset about it. And one other person that was with them was in favor of it. And they were all eating dinner together at McDonald's. So I know, you know, they all drove in the same car, but two of them was one at bigger nets and one at one at smaller. So, this is not going to the commission for a decision now. This is something we're discussing, and because we need, if you want to put options out to bring people, probably the stricter the better. You'll have more people show up. But if you know, this is going to the commission, I think we don't have enough people to relate the discussion.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment if I could. Option three is already the law on the mesh size. It's unlawful to fish anything greater than 6 inches during that time period, March 26th to June 15th. Is it adhered to? I don't know. And I don't have on-the-field experience to tell you whether it's adhered to or not. What I do know is this idea about no savings. So there's non-compliance in all our fisheries. Every fishery has non-compliance. Either undersized fish in recreational fisheries, over the bag in recreational fisheries. Commercial fisheries have non-compliance over the size when they're anything else like that. When we use our 2017 data, since we've had sort of a up and down compliance with this 28-inch size limit, if we have fish that are part of our sampling, they will be part of our savings because we have to make sure that doesn't keep occurring. Some years, it's been as high as 20% over the 28 inches. Some years it's been 3 or 4%, and recently I'm happy to see. But this has always been a situation, quite frankly, and you know, we need to get a hold of that. But you know, the Potomac situation, 36 inches, that's about a 10-year-old fish most of the time at 36 inch size. So you know, it has worked in the Potomac, it has worked in Maryland. We should have looked at that earlier, and I'm glad to hear that maybe there's some support for looking at that now. The 7-inch mesh, I'm hearing kind of different things about that, but I assume that a lot of folks are fishing with the 7-inch because the different state regs either say 5 to 7, 6 to 8, something like that. So we should continue to look at the mesh because, I mean, you are right. I mean, on the one hand, if we put a maximum size there, you would think that they would use the mesh size that didn't get extra fish of a larger size. But nonetheless, the mesh size is good. And I would think, I haven't talked to law enforcement directly, but I think law enforcement has a lot easier time to you know, be out there and look at the size limit as opposed to the mesh and take the measurement of the mesh and do all that. I think that that's probably a little more difficult. But again, we hope that harvesters use the mesh size that fits in with the size limit once we set a size limit. And no, we're not going to go to the commission except for a report tomorrow, and that's it for now. And then we come back here again after April 30th. We'll meet in May, and but that'll be a little bit different. Then we're going to have to start looking at what really should be put forward once we know what ASMSC exactly is going to do. And ASMSC hasn't upped the proposals beyond what Pat showed you, the 17% from 2017. And then on the commercial end, if you have good measures that we can justify to ASMSC, then we want to do that as well. Same with recreational fishery. If you have better measures than just raising the size limit, then we want to do that as well. So,
you know, everything that's been done to the recreational fishery has not worked. It, you know, it's up 300 or 400% when it's supposed to be down in 25, so everything's been done so far hasn't done anything.
Well, unfortunately in Virginia, whatever has caused the decline of the recreational fishery is worth being concerned about. I mean, our recreational fishery on the coast for striped bass hasn't been there for several years.
On the coast? Oh, you mean in the bay?
On the coast, on our coast.
On the coast, wintertime. It's the biggest it's ever been.
Wintertime, fucking wintertime. We used to have a January fishery. We don't have that. We used to have a strong bay fishery. I have a little chart with me, but we ranked, as I said last meeting, 1, 2, or 3 along the coast for many years. We're like 7 and 8 now.
But you know, you're only concerned with Virginia Beach. The Eastern Shore has a huge fishery now. I mean, a huge recreational fishery.
That's not the winter.
They're starting now, but usually May. I mean, it's astronomical. I've never seen, because there was never anybody there. And now it's 20, 30, 40, I mean, four-wheel drive that I can see from where I'm fishing things.
Are we talking rock fish?
For rock fishing, it was never none. Now, right now, they're only catching black drum. They haven't started catching rock yet. But when the rock leave the bay, they are there, and you better believe they're thick there, too. And I can bring you, I'll bring you a load of papers, because they'll have all of them in there with people catching, you know, 40-pound fish, 30-pound fish. I mean, it's amazing. And that fishery did not exist 10 years ago.
I don't know if anybody cares out of
the overall message should be large fish are being taken, large striped bass, regardless of where they're taken, being taken. And that's really something that Pat's diagram there should tell you a little something on the economy. So, Pat's back up, and I want to make those comments.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
What are you suggest for mesh bass for max size of 28 inches?
You know, like I say, years ago, I put the motion in front of the commission when I was commissioner, and I did it for, I think, part of February and March, because we wanted to save the spawning fish. And Rob actually signed it and sent it to me. And I don't have my phone with me, so I don't have it. But I know it was 9 inches, I guess, in the ocean and bay, because they were starting to use 10. And I used 10 at the time for black drum. You'll catch about a 20, 22-pound black drum in 10-inch net. But we'd already done it, so I don't... Was it 9 inches in the bay also, Rob?
Yes.
So, you know, if you would go, for example, 8 the first year, and then if you wanted to go to 7, don't do it all one time like that, because people have all these, you know. I ended up cutting that brand new shad nets, throw them away. I've ended up cutting out brand new drum nets, throw them away, because, you know, you just outlaw things and it's expensive on people. But I think if we do that, you need to go to 8 inches in the bay the first year, and then you can drop to 7. You can do the ocean if you want to get down to 8. You cannot get below 8. If you go to 7 and the fish have row in them, you're going to have a certain amount of discard. There is going to be fish under 28 inches, not a lot, but, you know, my hope is eliminate all discard. We don't want any. And to eliminate complete discard, you're going to have 7.5, which they do make.
Okay. Mike?
So my last thing to say is to keep not going over 28 inches, every waterman I know, including myself, we limit ourselves to a 6-inch net, which almost ensures that we are not gilling a fish that's over 28 inches, which weighs 8 to 9 pounds, sometimes 10. If we're going to have a 36-inch max, you have to match inches maximum size. You have to match the gill net size to that, or you're going to have dead discards of spawning fish, which is terrible. And then in my opinion, I'm going to a 7-inch, that is bay only. I believe that the ocean, because of the size fish out there, have to stay at 9 inches. 8, okay, but you're going to have some, if you're going to limit the size fish. But my only point there is I stay with the bay, not with the ocean, because it's a different group of fish. And then the last piece is in my research with Jill's great staff and with working with O'Beer Seafood, they told me for the month of March how many jumbo females that they bought, waterman brought in there. And if I take a guess on what percentage of the quota that O'Beer's caught, and they're one of the top big six buyers, my guess is somewhere between 7 and 12% of the spawning females would be saved, and that would mean we'd still catch the quota, but it would be smaller fish. And then the last piece of that is when these big females hit the market, and this year it was June 14th, the price goes down. It went from $4 to $1.75 a pound in about 9 days. And the guys that target the big fish, there's more and more small fish being caught. That's one of the reasons our average size fish keeps going down. You know, last year it was 6.2 pounds, and that's not because there's less big fish. It's because watermen are targeting the smaller fish because we get a higher price because the market's not flooded. So okay. I pulled my nets up when the price gets to $2 a pound, and I wait until the price goes back up, and then the nets go back out.
Thank you. Ernie? When we used to have a tag system before we had the poundage quota. I pushed very hard to change it to a poundage quota because people upriver caught a lot smaller fish, and they were really getting a bad end of the deal. It cost me fish. I lost a lot of weight by pushing it, but I thought it was the right thing to do. You know, I was having 400 tags. My fish were weighing 14 pounds. Several people, I won't mention their names now, but everybody knows them, were catching fish that weighed 3 and 4 pounds. Well, they were still only getting 400 tags, so they, you know, that was the most we ever got was 400. So they got 1,600 pounds. My 400 tags was like 5,600 pounds. And I felt like they deserved as much as I did. So we ended up getting cut.
So we all got the same amount, and then after that, everything changed because we got our ocean quotas straightened away and stuff. But, you know, people up the river generally catch smaller fish. They usually catch them earlier. They'll catch a lot of male fish that stay in the river. And they catch, you know, it's just the way things are. You're going to catch smaller fish.
Why does the Potomac with a 7-inch mesh average 8.2 pounds for their entire quota?
I don't understand that. I really don't. Yeah, that's about the smallest size fish you can catch in a 7-inch net. So that means everything you're catching just barely catch for it to be 8 pounds. Of course, you know, you're working on a different fish than I am. You're working on a fish that's all full of roe, and its belly's a lot bigger. So the fish would be smaller. But, you know, they're going to gill not by their length. They're going to gill by their girth.
Remember, the Potomac closes March 26th. After March 26th, no nets at all in the water.
Yeah, but you still have fish going up in there way before then, a certain amount. Some years you do, some years you don't.
All right, gentlemen.
I went for the season as variable. You know, we're in a different world altogether. I have to catch a big fish. I'm not allowed to catch a smaller fish. You know, that's the whole thing of being coastal. We have to catch bigger fish. And Rob just said a minute ago, a 36-inch fish is around 10 years old. You know, for years we said that a 28-inch fish was 8 years old. So in 2 years' time, you have to catch 228 to make 136. In 2 years' time, you would have 236s. So what have you done? You know, you could have replaced that one that you took, you could have replaced it with two. That's just common math, you know.
Okay.
I think, you know, and Rob will tell you the same, anybody fisherman, there's a wide variety on ages on one, you know. Some of them might be five or 6 years old when they mature. Some of them might be 10 before they mature.
All right. Anything else?
You know, I think that's a good place to start. I think you're going to have people on the bays that want a minimum of 8, at least on our side. The rivers is completely different. It's just, you know, the fish I'm catching right now, like I said earlier, they're Delaware Bay and Hudson River and places. They're not fish coming to the bay. They're going the other direction. That would be a good place to start. If this is not something you want to take to the commission for a final, that would be something to get people interested in coming, because we need to hear from a lot of people. We don't need two or three. You know, I'm known to Gilnet. Well, I guess you, Gilnet. Well, basically, you know, that's it. And I think that's what we need to do, and that's probably a good place to start.
The Twin River Watermen's Association, where Wayne France is the president, he asked me to say our Watermen's Association supports the 7-inch.
Doug wants you to do that. Doug's the president of the Twin River.
He's vice president. Wayne France is the president.
Because he actually spoke against it when he was here.
I understand. Wayne called me today and asked me to say this and asked me to give him feedback on my way back home tonight.
All right. Thank you. Yes, please.
I agree with her. I think it's a good place to start. I think most of our watermen are going to want 8 in the bay, but if we could step it down and give them a chance to use their gear, then I think we could get to a 7, 7.5. So I think it's a good place to start. Really?
Can you?
And didn't Rob say there was already a 6-inch in the bay from March 28th to June 15th, March 26th? So we've already got a 6-inch mesh in place. Okay.
Hey, Mike.
Last question. How would we measure this to be able to say, from a conservation standpoint, this, by going to an 8-inch or 7-inch, how many spawning females were saved? Not sampling, please.
We had a selectivity curve that I presented last month that everyone thought was hogwash. But, you know, if we had a good set of selectivity curves with different size meshes, you can get an idea of what percent of a given size fish is being caught in that mesh. So you can get an idea of what the savings would be by using certain meshes.
It's very easy. The buyers measure fish in small, medium, large, and jumbo. And just ask the buyers to give you statistics on how many jumbo fish that they bought, which is the females. And if you compare, and if you get that statistic now for 2019, and you change the gill net mesh size to next year, then you would know if there's a savings.
Well, I mean, you know, our biological sampling program measures, you know, samples of 5,000 striped bass last year. It's a pretty good sample size. So with that kind of, that's a data set that we can use as well. What's coming in, we can look at that information as well.
But calling the buyers and ask them to give you numbers of fish is free. It's a data point. They keep it.
Yes.
Do they change sex? Striped bass don't change sex like sea bass, do they? So a lot of those fish that's under 28 inches may very well be immature females.
We already do a report monthly to the VMRC as a buyer, number of fish, weight of fish. So
that's a total weight of fish. I mean, just ask, of all those fish, how many were jumbo females?
Well, I couldn't tell you which was a jumbo or which was a female or a male. And everybody could have a different, like if you do an 8 to 12 for a large and a 12 over a jumbo, people are going to have different definitions of jumbo. It's going
to
change, so I don't think it's that simple.
Okay. Do you have more to present?
That's all I have.
Okay. Do we have any? Tom Powers, thank you.
We'll get
to you in a minute.
I do have a question to staff about your sampling. How do you randomize the size when you go to the buyers and say, we want to get some samples?
Randomize the size?
Yes. So you had a size distribution of the commercial fishery that you showed in one of your earlier slides. How do you randomize the fish you picked?
It's just an uncalled sample. I mean, you know, I could go in, you know, selecting a sample from a pile of fish is, you could, there's a number of ways to do it, but it's an uncalled sample.
But it's an uncalled sample, but it is a culled sample because the buyer didn't buy a certain size or would be more likely not to buy a certain size, or the fisherman would be less likely to bring that size in because it's got a lesser market value. We've heard that one in past meetings repeatedly, that the average size is going down because they can get more money per pound for the smaller fish, or the medium-sized fish, not the smaller fish.
When Ernie brought me 300 pounds today, the Mara was on our dock sample, and she sampled all of them.
Okay.
So his whole catch. So it wasn't she picked this one or she picked that one. She did his whole catch.
Okay.
When she goes and picks up, we get Ed Brady's, if he's got 300 or 400 pounds, I'll let her sample them all. So she'll do his whole batch of fish.
So it's randomized because they're doing entire.
She'll do on my dock. Right. She'll do the entire boat sometimes.
Yeah.
Just depends.
Okay. I beg your pardon?
Recreational is next.
Oh.
Okay.
Let's finish commercial. Are there guys that would like to speak on? Yes, please. Come up, give us your name, and tell us who you represent, if anyone.
Split between the little ones and the big ones and work on the price, not the fish. But if you put everybody in the rivers, there's a disaster.
Okay, the ASMSC says we have to do something because the overall stock is declining drastically. But
yeah.
So I appreciate your comments.
A 7-inch would be a nightmare in the bay. That's a, just a bad size net.
You would prefer?
I'd prefer a 9-inch.
Nine.
The fish in the ocean are the same fish in the bay. He said himself, he can catch them with 4 or 5 fish.
Okay.
He don't catch his till they come out the bay.
Well, I'm catching mine before that, but most of them do wait till they come out of the bay. I'm in Shank Tig. I'm up to the north of the state. I'm still catching fish that's gone north.
Yes, very few. When they come out of the bay, you'll catch them 100 a day.
Most of the time, I have mine caught about before then, but yes.
But
Most
people will.
I fished down Rudy Inlet before y'all kicked me out of there. It's the same fish.
Appreciate it. Was there someone else that had a comment from the audience? Hello.
Kelly Place from Williamsburg, commercial fisherman. Is this working? And it's this.
Hi, Ben Kelly.
On what George just said, I missed the first part of his comment. I was surprised, and I would like to see staff bring the most recent catch data from based on the mandatory reports to see if the average fish didn't go up. It was unusual considering the last 9 or 10 years in a row. I caught the majority of my quota, unlike in the rivers like I have the previous 10 years or so, in the main stem of the bay and on the eastern shore. We had to go over and help people that had more big fish than they had in a long time. Usually we have to help them catch their quota. This time we showed up because we had to take their nets so they didn't waste fish. They had tagged out already, but it was unusual. I've never seen them run where there's so many different, especially on the eastern shore, so many different sizes, all of which I consider big fish, ranging from 8 to 40 pounds, all running together. Usually people are using a specific mesh size because typically you're working on fish of the same or similar year classes. And then the same thing happened over on the western side of the bay after rapid started in late February, and we hadn't seen the large fish come in like that for a number of years. I've been concerned about the paucity of large fish compared to previous years, the first part of the 2000s. But that sure wasn't the case this year, so I'm not trying to advocate for any one of the options, but I would like to see, as this discussion moves forward, for staff to see what the average size, especially in the main stem of the bay, was this year, because typically when it's a large fish run, like I think Ernie said, the ocean, you have to have 8-inch, and that's kind of maybe 9, but 8-inch was always a real standard size when people were fishing for relatively large fish, 10 to 20, maybe 22 pounds. This year, when the large fish came in much earlier, 3-4 weeks earlier than they had in many years, into the lower part of the bay, an 8-inch was too small. And that was kind of a shock. So a lot of people were fishing 8.5 and 9 inches and catching 0 in 8 inches, but were averaging. And this sort of bothered me, but it was a big surprise. It was kind of nice to see them averaging 25 to 40 pounds for several weeks at a time. Big shock, a big unusual thing. But because of that, it's kind of an anomaly from what I've ever seen. And I've fished with striped bass fishery since its inception, and I've served as Virginia's representative on the Striped Bass Advisory Panel, the ASMBC, from 1998 until present. So as this goes on, I would like to see the catch data from this year to see how it compares to previous years, because they probably haven't tabulated it yet. If I don't get my reports in, I'm pretty sure Jill, Pat, and Rob are going to bring me up here and beat me in front of you guys. But I hadn't had such an average size. We typically get gone into the rivers in recent years to catch them starting January 15th. So that's a critical time. The first couple months of the year, which didn't used to be open for the commercial fishery, we're able to get a really large price often for small fish. So it's been nice to have the whole year to do it, to avoid market gluts and to keep the price up. But to support what Mr. Price mentioned just a minute ago, it was a shocking amount of large fish this year. And having been working with the ASMSC for so long, that's kind of encouraging, because that's what we've been working for a long time, to reduce the mortality on the spawning stock by amassing this year, for the first time, I saw more spawning stock bottom mass than I've seen in a long time. That doesn't mean I'm advocating for one or the other or more or less regulations. It's just that I think that not only should we keep the current catch data as current as we can get it from BMRC, but I'd also suggest that whenever we go up to ASMFC, that they should be considering under their adaptive management regime the possibility of being able, for having their respective member states be able to decide on the spur of the moment what the mesh size restrictions will be, because year to year you have a different class of fish coming in, almost by definition. There are some years that certain meshes don't catch because fish of that year class are not prevalent, as opposed to other years when you've got a dominant year class that's successfully gotten to reproductive age that will make up the dominant Melvin run. And if you unfortunately have them, and this has happened to us and others before, if you have a mesh size restriction that doesn't match up with what the predominant fish are, you spend a lot of time trying to catch your quota, and that increases dead discards as well as any other bycatch. So that is some kind of flexibility in whatever BMRC put forth to ASMFC, I think might be good, because we really don't know what exactly is going to constitute the run year class wise from year to year. And that is an important thing. To that point, I think I'd suggest maybe the committee would want to consider as much as we've had bycatch allowances in the past to avoid wasting fish, such as the sea trout bycatch has been in effect for 10 or 20 years. Even though there's no season on sea trout, there are times they come through, so the gill netters in the bay, they're allowed a 100-pound bycatch in case they're fishing for croaker spawn or whatever, just so if they do get a run of sea trout, they don't all get wasted. But it's low enough that it precludes the fishermen from wanting to target sea trout, which they've been trying to protect and increase for a while. So it might be something to consider that even, say, you all decide on a mesh size restriction, 7 inches or whatever, although I think different regions need different mesh sizes, by the way. I don't think that anything up in the river where I often fish should be the same as in the bay, much less the ocean. But I do think that a bycatch allowance, because whether you're in any of those waters, you will occasionally catch a fish, not a lot of them, because gill net's real specific and it tends to catch a certain size fish. But you can be fishing a 6, 7, or 8 inch net and lip lock the occasional large fish. So I think there should be some sort of bycatch allowance, not just a strict size limit, not enough to cause people to go to a high mesh and target big fish, but enough that in small enough, 1, 2, 3 fish, something like that, where if they do catch one that's much larger than the size net that they're fishing, instead of having it be wasted, not only is it kept, but it doesn't contaminate the sampling results, right? You want those kind of instances to be reflected in your sampling results. You know, the fact that there are occasional big fish caught, or by the same token, smaller fish than the mesh size that you're trying to tailor the regulations for. Last thing is more of a question for Rob. Because I have a lot of concerns, and most of those I'll voice later, maybe send you all a letter, but Rob, obviously for years they managed to strike bass fishery with the virtual population analysis, and then, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago, I guess, they went to the statistical catch-at-age model, which is what we're using now, right? So we're still statistical catch-at-age. The one thing that those two models have had in common that never has changed is the retrospective bias, meaning that every single year when they've measured the mortality, and they used the tank-based model that Jill's in charge of to kind of ground truth, because that's the old way that for many years they had been estimating fishing mortality, but the retrospective bias in both of the models, they haven't gotten rid of this, and it's been the subject of a lot of discussion at ASMFC for many years, but never any solution, is that those models, over time, they become more accurate. In other words, we end up tailoring our fishery to the mortality estimates they had from the previous year. But those years have had this retrospective bias and have been inaccurate every single year. Every single year, the retrospective bias has overestimated mortality. And as they hindcast and look at that over time, they realize, okay, we overestimated mortality again. So my concern, I guess one question for Rob, obviously since they're different models, but they still have the retrospective bias, and every single year for over 20 years have overestimated mortality, almost 30 years now. Have they been working, and have they come to any kind of idea of what type of inputs to the models are causing these false readings of higher mortality that later when they hindcast it, as the years go on, they can see what the actual mortality was? Are we still seeing the retrospective bias that we've seen for the last 25 or 30 years?
I will have an answer to that at the next meeting, but I must insist that we go over the recreational options. Everyone here, please understand, we are not proposing anything yet.
Okay.
We're trying to provide some options so that when the hammer comes down, as it will, you have some freedom to say, well, why can't we try this or why can't we try that? All the information about the fishery and everything else is very good information, but let's wait until we get the options out, when we come back from ASMFC, and then it's time to for everyone to sit down and figure out what's going to suit the fishery, the resource, the best. I mean, I'm charged with the resource.
Let's go.
I'm charged with conserving. Yes, it's important to have the fisheries, but the resources first. So I will answer that question next time.
That's where I'll follow up. And we appreciate the open-ended process and the fact that you all aren't, that no one seems determined to have any option. I think everyone wants the most effective option, recreational.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Kelly.
If there's a flaw in the data, which there has been for 30 years now, because the models and the retrospective bias, it may be you can't do anything about that, but I appreciate that maybe next time there'll be a discussion on that, because that's something that's concerned not only the board, all of the different committees, technical and otherwise, but because we tailor our regulations year to year based on the previous year, but the previous year for 30 years in a row has been the least accurate year over time, it's a matter of concern, because everyone wants the resource first, I would hope, and to have the regulations be effective. So that flaw in the data, I'd like to see addressed.
Thank you, Kelly. Pat?
It's me.
Oh, it's you. Okay.
I don't mean to cut off anyone tonight from information, but I do think this is important as well. And you can probably guess the commercial fishery is going to be very difficult for us.
I'll give you a couple more.
We just don't have the same flexibility that commercial fishing has without an IGP. So we're looking for it on it, and I think you may get two suggestions tonight. I'm going to the next side, I'm going to the Potomac River tributary in Virginia, so that's pretty good.
This is the same one that went out before the last meeting?
Yeah, same one. I wasn't sure when you saw everything, though, but you went through it fairly quickly just so you can get a re-familiarity. And you can see that likely 2017 is where I keep seeing the ASMFC. And that's only the technical committee. And what we have to keep in mind is the management board may have different ideas. So we have to wait for that. So I can say definitely as a staff person that 2017 is what they want to do. But it seems since the stock assessment went through 2017, that's why they're looking at that. And again, the overall objective is a 50% reduction, 50% probability, that these measures, the 17% reduction, will reach the target fishing mortality rate. And what's banked on that as well, of course, nothing is alone. So obviously, There are year classes that there have been several comments tonight about year classes, and 2014-15 were a little better than some of the other year classes. Not as good as 2011, but a little bit better. So when they do these projections, when they figure out how things are going to be in a few years, they're using that information as well. So this is a straight one. One trophy size fish per year. And, you know, this is a 36-inch and up information. And it's not a weighty situation with the savings and harvest. But keep in mind, we compared the biological sampling program to the program where fishermen send their tags and the number of fish and everything. By far, the biological sampling program is much more accurate, if I can say that. It's not completely accurate, but it's much more accurate. We have MRIP running through our recreational estimates. Everyone's heard different things about MRIP. And so these percentages are sort of what we did in 2017, according to MRIP. And the revised MRIP, you know, they revised it effective 2018, July 1, but they rolled in those new MRIP values into the summer flounder assessment and the striped bass assessment. So the second option is looking at non-offset circle hook, and you can see that for 2017 that does show some savings. What I know about the circle hook is that Maryland had a proposal, as some of you remember, last year, and I think at the 11th hour, it only applied to the
recreational,
the private fleet, essentially, the recreational. So, you know, that will definitely generate some situations here in Virginia, although what Alex has done, who's not here tonight, shows about 12% savings from 2017 data.
May we ask a question?
Pardon?
May we ask a question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So if you go back to this non-offset circle hook, so that's, if they say 17%, that would get us a 12% savings?
Well,
so this is dead discards. Are they counting it that way?
What we have figured out now, everything has to be blessed by the ASMFC. So they're supposed to pick at everything, and that's what they're supposed to do. That's their job. That's their job as technical. So I'm just saying from the data that we've looked at, that's what it seems to be.
So
you still have to defend it.
So I'm drifting peeler crabs across the flat trying to catch speckled trout, and I catch a striped bass. Do I have to use, and I might catch a striped bass, call it that way, do I have to use an offset circle hook for that? How do you deal with mixed fisheries?
Emmett says if you target a fishery or you encounter a fish species, then that's a directed trip. So I'll leave that with you and you'll talk to me next time, right? I'm not going to get that deep into that one. So any other questions or comments on this?
Okay. Not at the moment.
Someone said something.
No, I said not at the moment.
I think.
Oh, Mike.
I was at the Finfish Committee on the Potomac. We considered circle hooks last year, and I thought the committee was going to recommend it, but when the public audience spoke, there were a number of Potomac charter boat captains who were livid about going to circle hooks. But it is such a scientifically proven savings.
They work. It just takes a little time to get used to them.
It just takes patience.
Yeah.
And change.
Yep. You have to adjust for it, but they're well worth using.
But right. After a period of time, less and less complaints about it.
You're right. I agree. Thank you.
Thank you. We have something to look forward to now. Appreciate that. So just look at the 2017. The vessel limit, you weren't too warm about that last time. This is borrowed from the Cobia fishery, where we still are harvesting a lot of cobia, by the way, but this was a calming down type of proposal. and we have had that in place now for the second year on the cobia fishery. So you don't have to commit to anything. I just want to make sure that you leave refreshed with these type of options, because we'll be coming back to them as well. And then any time that you have thought of something that you think should be looked at, just email us. And we'll do the work in advance of your next meeting. I think the big problem is we don't yet know exactly what's going to happen by April 30th. So that's a little bit of a holdback for us as far as looking at things. But you can come up with options we can test. And this is the same. It's just four fish, so you can probably see that the savings go down. So we were looking at a pretty good savings, 19% plus. Three fish, and now we're looking at just over 6% with four fish. And that's just the EMRIC data. So Alex does get into the raw data and work with that, which is a benefit for us. So, I mean, at least you're getting something that has to have some semblance of savings that we hope to end up with for these options. But again, we're not planning on taking 10 options to ASMSC. We're hoping that when we come back, there's just a few options. And then, of course, the option ASMSC comes up with. This is a retread. This was done in 2006. And there wasn't a lot of flack back then about this, because the fishery was booming from 2004 to 2007, really. But I mean, we had a big fishery, no doubt about it. And so we spent 3 years working with the committee to have options that wouldn't, you know, completely, you know, take a bad effect on the fishery, but would slow the fishery down. And then the recession hit, and when the recession hit, it seems like the striped bass also started to decline for recreational fishery. No correlation there whatsoever, just mentioning it. So that's 5%. So this is, you have to read this a little more carefully, I think. So no trophy season, which you know is coming up tomorrow, and just have a 28-inch maximum size for both fish through December 15th. So just two 28-inch max. Nothing in October where you'd be able to have one over 28, for example, when that October 4 season kicks off. You'd still be on two fish at 28 max, and then from December 16th through 31st, one can be greater than 28 inches. And that's a very similar savings as the previous situation with December 10th, December 31st, one fish.
Okay, Ernie has a question.
I have a question.
Talking about eliminating the bay and coastal trophy season. So does that revert back to the regular coastal season, where they're allowed one fish over 28 inches? Or does it?
Season's open.
Yeah. It stays open, except now you don't have to be 36 again, only be 28.
That's May. I think the way it is, and someone can look it up real quick, but it's a May 1 to May 15th in the coast. Yes. So during that time period, you wouldn't have anything over 36 inches.
But you could keep 28 to 36.
Yes. But that's the trophy season. And it's also in our tributaries to the Potomac, the third one. There's actually three spring seasons.
But the rest of the time in the ocean, you're allowed to have one fish over 28 inches, regardless of how big it is.
For right now.
Yeah, but
after May 16th.
Right. I was just wondering if, you know, because you're closing it completely in the bay, because there will be no bigger fish. They can't keep anything over 28.
Well, it's a little deceptive, and Jill helped me out with this as well. Two things. One, the trophy-sized fish in the bay goes all the way to June 15th. That can be one of your fish. That'll be gone, and you'll be capped in the bay at 28 inches. Okay? And then in the Potomac area, or our Potomac trips of Virginia, That season starts April 18th and runs to May 15th and happens to have a different size on it, 35 inches, but that would be cut off as well. But again, that's the proposal for the commission tomorrow. We felt it, even though it's an emergency regulation, we want to advertise it widely anyway. We put it on the web and everything else. So we'll do that tomorrow. This is the no-take slot limit, and someone was smart enough, I think it was Lewis, to point out that although we had between 28 and 36 inches now, in the past when we did this, we had 28 to 34. So this was an improvement where, you know, you're only going to have one fish 36 inches or greater in that no-take slot. So you can have a fish at 36 and up. You can have a fish just over 28. No, 28 to 36 is out. So, you know, you have one fish 36 inches or greater. I did that well. So that's 8.4%.
4.8.
I commend staff for having come up with these, because otherwise we'd be sitting here in May saying, what do we do? And you'd be saying, what are you doing? So staff did a good job here.
Jeff?
This you already know about. Donate the bay and coastal trophy season and add to that the tributaries to the Potomac. Or establish a 28-inch maximum size, I just mentioned, all the way to November 30th. So again, your October fishery, and even as you get into November, you would have 28 inches as your max. And then for the month of December, you could have one fish greater than 28 inches.
Rob, I think Tom had a
I was on the previous
on
one.
Seven.
Can you please, when you consider the numbers, look at the no-take slot for the entire fall season? Just to keep the regulations simple and consistent.
So, you want to go throughout?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to, I mean, yeah.
All right.
And we need to change the papers that were handed out. One fish can be 34 inches or greater.
No, that's the, if you have that from a previous email.
So when you just handed out.
Lewis caught the fact that, no, we're looking at 36 inches.
And it's
between 28 and 36. That happened after our first meeting.
It's 4.8% on this and not 8.4.
8.4 is the percentage now because we went up to 36. So
okay.
That's what you get from going from 34 to 36. And frankly, we weren't looking at it that way. We were looking at the fact that a lot of our options are based on 36 inches. So why would that be based on 34?
Okay.
Excuse me. But Rob, you're still showing 34 on the handout. That's the same thing you gave us the last time.
I'll look back there for the heck of it.
Well, all right. Well,
no,
whoever
actually,
you look at,
36.
Whoever changed it, the percentage changed, but 34 is still on the handout.
All right, my apologies.
So this should be changed to 36 for all the people at this table.
This is something that I copied today, so we
okay.
will change that.
Thank Sorry.
You for making me honest.
All right. Thank you.
We'll take care of that.
Appreciate
what you're talking about, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, only takes two people to make the same point, and I got it. All right. So this is another similar type option. This is doing away with the trophy season, eliminating the trophy season, the 28-inch limit, and then one fish or the two fish may be greater than 28. That sounds like a retread, but I mean, I don't know how it looks on your sheet. But I think what happened is I went back to Tom's question and then moved back to this. You already saw that. One fish per vessel, greater than 28 inches. And that seems odd to me even. So only one fish with two possession limits can be greater than 28 inches. Doesn't seem like much to me. But, you know, that doesn't mean you can't. can't have other fish on the vessel is the point. The key thing is in bulk per vessel. So you have one fish on the vessel greater than 28. That doesn't mean the other fishermen can't have fish.
Okay, Rob, can you send us all that, what you're reading from? It varies from this.
Yes.
Thank you.
You have the
second sentence
cheat sheet that was prepared, probably another meeting. These are the options that you were sent as well.
Okay.
In case the circle book and the one trophy fish per year weren't part of what you got in the last PowerPoint, I'll send you this PowerPoint.
Okay.
And then we'll also change the sheet that has the 34 inches.
All right, Tom had a question.
The second sentence there is not consistent with the first.
Minimum size limit is 20 inches, and one of two fish possession limit can be greater than 28 inches. But that's just, okay, but, and only one fish in the vessel can be. You've got kind of two different things there.
One fish per vessel, greater than 28 inches. That's correct. You can have two fish in the Chesapeake Bay area. That's correct.
But still only one fish in the vessel can be.
And only one fish can be greater than 28 inches.
For the vessel?
In the vessel. In the vessel.
Yeah.
Is that what you want to do?
Well, I would say you still get the two limits between 20 and 28, or two fish per person between 20 and 28, period. Because you already stated in the previous sentence that it's per vessel above
28.
I don't like it, but that's what,
all right.
Yeah.
Somehow I hope wrote that down for me. So this is just the same thing the commission's going to see tomorrow, and I'd like to say it's action-packed in terms of savings, but at the bottom you see the savings. They're very small. So we have no idea how many trophy-sized fish have been caught since 1995. We have no idea. We've had mandatory reporting since 1995. We used to have to hand out sheets and bring sheets to vendors and do all that and go to that length and never could get the reporting. We finally got 50% reporting in 2018. Do I have that right? In 2018, 50%. So we don't know how large fish. Is it really 397? I mean, one time we had as much as 1,000 fish. That's the highest estimate we ever had. And we really have no way to expand anything until recently when we set up the database to do that. And so this was expanded for non-reporting. But the problem is when you have a reporting system, there's all sorts of different types of biases that you can have. And I won't say more other than the fact that it's sort of a disappointment to me because we didn't even know whether we wanted a trophy size fishery in 1995. It was, you know, half the camp was saying no and the other half was saying yes, and staff went along and did it. So for the folks who are going to be a little bit upset, all I can say is these are big fish. We don't know how many fish they are. I sort of cringe when I hear the word precautionary in management because it means a lack of information, but I think this is a precautionary request of the commission. Even though it is not going to defray the percentage savings or reductions that we have to end up taking in Virginia. You want to see this real quickly? We've got a few minutes. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm not sure you saw this before. So this is sort of interesting, and I'll send you the whole PowerPoint. Everyone gets it. This is based on EMRIC, of course. And what we have here is the harvested fish, raw data. So this looks kind of funny. You know, because I went to Alex and I said, what do you mean 34 fish? Well, he's working with raw data, and if we went to a one fish possession limit, maybe down to 25, you would save nine fish. You would still have dead fish in there for release, but you end up with a 24% reduction. And so I went back to Alex and I said, well, wait a minute, are you sure anyone does this? And he said, yeah. Matter of fact, the Striped Bass Technical Committee, they operate on raw fish. So you have the notes here. When I send it to you, please read the notes. It does the math for you on the bottom line on how this happens. And then 2018 is here. So this is just a treatment of 2017 and 2018. More fish in 2018, but still if we went to a one fish limit, we still end up with a comparable 24% reduction.
Jeff? Technical question. Is this the number, for example, this 126, is that the number of fish dockside intercepted?
Where'd you say this? You read one of the lines?
Yeah, it's where it says harvested fish, the bottom box, top line, harvested fish 126. That means the actual dockside intercepts for the whole season? Question mark, or is it just?
As far as I know, this represents the raw data.
So that is a horribly low number for this fishery.
Expansions, right?
Yeah, I mean, this, in 2003, when I looked at this data, that was like 1,000, 2,000.
We have our red tech expert.
That's the actual sample size.
Yeah.
What, the actual what?
Sample size.
That's the number of...
Who had two fish. Where they had two fish.
Right.
You could have a lot of trips where you just had one fish, but that's the actual number of...
See, we're only working on the trips where what they used to call the contributor.
So is that the angler trips where there were two fish per for that angler? So if you had three people on a boat and they got five fish, that would be two.
That'd be one person.
No. Three people on a boat, they had five fish in the boat, two of them got two fish.
Thanks, John.
All right. That seems like an amazingly low number.
Okay. To me, too. That's why I asked twice. That's the way it works, and I have Lewis's validation.
That's why we decided to do our own survey for the trophy fish, because we never would show a trophy fish caught in Virginia, but you knew they'd only have to capture one boat, three anglers that have limited fish, one fish each, and blow up in...
I know, I'd love to get the data set, but I remember looking at 2003 data a lot, and there were, I think, like 2,000 intercepts or 1,000 intercepts with striped bass. And it's just...
Well, we'll have our brain trust back next meeting for the EMRIT questions, because I can tell you, I haven't been in EMRIT except for the website. This is a size limit analysis, so what should jump out at you? You can read these notes later on how this was done. I think try and ignore the fact that note 5 was repeated twice at the bottom, but all you have to do is look across, and we're looking at dead releases and the harvest change. So 22 inches from where we are now does achieve a 17% reduction. So I would have to wonder what you think about that as an option. And based on what you know, as you look around, we'll have more data for you. But I think you have that sheet with all the states and their harvest and their dead discards and their total removals. So that's pretty important once you start talking about changes in size. My impression of a change in size limit is it depends on the year class, but you can have some problems in the bay. And on the coast, if they change the size limit there, then you've got Hudson, Delaware, and Chesapeake fish that aren't recruited to the gears yet, which is mainly hook and line, because they're not big enough yet. And so you run into more dead discards that way, too. And so I know it's become sort of a bad situation with summer flounder, somewhat less of a situation with black sea bass, but, you know, there must be better ways, and, you know, we'll wait and see what they do at the board. This is just looking at how many days we have to close, just what Pat showed you on black sea bass. Similar approach there. You could close in wave three, in wave five, and barely get above 4% for reduction. You know wave six is the wave. I mean, over time, not so much lately, but wave six used to be as much as 75 to 80% of the entire year's fishery. And that does, 23 days in wave six will achieve a 17% reduction. And then this is thrown down just to another year to show you the similarity. You still would with 15 days in wave six. And I don't have a label on this, but I have a feeling this is 2017 and this is 2018. And so this would be, the, you know, at least right now, the technical committee is saying 2017. And I'll double check on that and put the year in the header sheet. So there are options. Just gives you the flavor of the coast, all the states together in the blue line here, and Virginia here. So that's our contribution in recent years. And this will be the last slide that just shows what I was talking about earlier. You know, when the fishery reopened in 1990 and the reason 2005 that we're fifth place in the rankings, so these are all the states from Maine to North Carolina, and we're ranking ourselves in that mix. Well, hard to compete in wave five. We have a terrific fishery, but Maryland and Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey, they have even bigger fisheries. So that's why we were fifth place that year. But generally you can see that, you know, things have fallen off in the last several years compared to where things were. So that's all I have. All right. It is the witching hour. It's 8 o'clock. And unless there are any more questions, I'd probably be in bad stead with my staff here if they said, well, you technically didn't fit.
All right, for a quick, please. Yeah, of course.
Did I hear you say that you were considering going to, well, first, the best way, in my opinion, to know how many fish are caught recreationally is with some accountability. And NRIP is the only numbers, and I know it's difficult with accountability there. But did I hear you say that you were, VMRC, you would, your staff would consider going to a tag for a trophy or large rockfish, as well as for cobia?
We're not considering, we're proposing that as an option. So, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to know what we'll end up considering. That's going to take your help, too. Yes, there is an option. We have one 36 and greater size rockfish per person per season. And it would be a tag base. And it could be manageable, is what I'm hearing from Adam. Things we could manage that if we had another person to help out with and everything else. But we'll talk about that more too.
And then the last piece is, if you assume that the charter boat or for hire industry on the recreational side is about half of the total fish caught, I think there would be some willingness there. And I know this from talking to some of the big, two of the big charter boat operators, to go to a tag program, but no pound quota program, just a tag program for the charter boats, which would give you accountability and numbers of fish from half of the recreational side.
Let's talk about that later, because okay, we've tried to go down a similar road just with reporting data. And I mean, people get busy and things don't work out. But we'll talk about that later. I appreciate the comment. And
would you real quickly please introduce our guest? introduce our guest. I recognize him, but I don't know his name.
Donner's on the commission, one of our commission members. He's also on the FinFish Management Advisory Committee. I would have thought you would have seen that, but my apologies for not introducing you earlier.
I'm sorry, what was his name?
KJ.
Mr. Minor.
Minor?
KJ.
KJ Minor.
And a staff person, so he's Mr.
Mine. Mr. Mine. And then we have a new member, Mike Lightfoot.
Yes.
Okay.
Mike Lightfoot is new, but you knew him from the last meeting.
Last meeting, yes.
He is on the FinFish Management Advisory Committee as well. This was his first meeting, and we've chopped a lot into the meeting. We'll be back. It's a good news.
All right.
Motion
to adjourn. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
Yeah. Rob, can I request some information for our next meeting? The stuff you sent me. Can we have that so we can have it on the overheads?
Yes.
'Cause I really think it needs to be discussed.
Okay.
I'll show you what I want when we're done.
Oh.
Thank you.
Real quick, Chris. All right. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Our next meeting, Rob?
I think the best thing to do is hear what happens at ASMFC.
Okay.
And then send out an email.
Thank you for non-emotional, factual.
That's what I will always do.
All these guys are on that way.
Statistics.
Thank you for non-emotional, factual.
Apparently so.
I'll keep saying it. The other two jurisdictions in the Bay.
The hell
do
you
great.
Do?
Do work.
I can't wait. On recreational side,
Correct. But then I'm not defending.